So we have been discussing the first chapter of second canto. So in response to Parikshit Maharaj's questions, Shukadeva Goswami has started to answer. The question was, you know, what is the best duty for everyone at all times, and especially for those at the time of death, what is to be done? And then he clarified this question by mentioning what should be chanted, what should not be chanted, what should be heard, what should not be heard, what should be remembered, what should not be remembered, and whom should be worshipped and whom should not be worshipped. So in response, in one sense, if you see, Shukadeva Goswami has answered. He said that, you know, for those people who are not interested in self-realization, there are so many subject matters to think, hear, discuss, remember. But for those who have understood the purpose of life, the way is to perform bhakti. Tasmat bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishvaro harihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyascha ichata abhayam. And then he gives his own example. See, even I was a very established jnana yogi, but I gave up that path and took up to bhakti. And that likewise, there are so many people, jnanis, yogis, karmis, who gave up what they were practicing as soon as they understood the ultimate goal of life, what it is. So therefore, he says that I learned this Bhagavatam very scrutinizingly from my father as soon as I understood the importance of this path. So attractive were the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord that it attracted me, even though I was completely fixed in my goal of Brahman. So therefore, I conclude that bhakti, which is characterized by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, etc., is the best path, it's the best sadhana, and the sadhya that it gives, that is prema, is the highest prayojan. And amongst this various limbs of bhakti, he concludes by mentioning that Harer Namana Kirtanam is the topmost. This is where we ended yesterday. So before we move further, if there are any comments, questions, that you might want to discuss, maybe a few minutes we can take and then we'll move ahead. Okay. So, one interesting thing, if you have observed, that Shukadeva Goswami has conclusively established that the topmost path is bhakti, and amongst bhakti, kirtanam is the topmost. But he chose to do it, and rather he made Parikshit Maharaj do Shravanam. After establishing, even if Shukadeva Goswami would have done Shravanam, and if he would have allowed, or if both of them could have done Kirtanam, Harinam Sankirtan together, right? If he has very so conclusively established that Harinam Sankirtan is the topmost, then he should have allowed Parikshit Maharaj to do Harinam Sankirtan for 7 days. He took all of that 7 days and made him do Shravanam only. So, once when we were discussing this in Pune, so devotees asked this question. So, if Shukadeva Goswami has so conclusively established that Harinam Sankirtan is the topmost, then shouldn't he have allowed Parikshit Maharaj to do Harinam Sankirtan for 7 days? Why did he make him to hear? Because my 2 cents worth opinion, Shravanam is the limb which empowers all the other limbs of bhakti. Because ultimately, whether it is bhakti or any other process, it runs on the fuel of faith. So faith is the fuel. the extent to which faith is there, only to that extent the results will come. Therefore, about faith, so many things it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. One thing that is mentioned is Ashraddaya hutam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayat asaditi uchate partha nachatat pretyanoiha. Krishna says in the 17th chapter that anything, whether it may be a sacrifice or charity or tapasya, whatever, if it is done without the requisite faith, it is as good as not doing that activity at all, because it will not give any result in this life or next life. Ashraddana purusha dharmasya asya parantapa apraptyamam nivartante mrti samsara vartmani. Like that, you know, in so many places Krishna establishes the importance of faith as the prerequisite to achieve success in a particular activity. So faith, so all these processes run on the fuel of faith. And Shravanam is that one limb which infuses faith. That's why in many temples you see, you know, we spend time chanting the Shikshashtakam prayers, and then there is a japa talk, or we read from some books glorifying the holy name. If Harinam Sankirtan is the topmost, if that Shikshashtakam time and the japa talk time, if all that is put together comes to about 15-20 minutes, you could chant at least 2-3 extra rounds. Instead of 16, maybe chant 19-20 rounds. But still we take that time out to hear that, chant the Shikshashtakam prayers. Why? So that it enhances our faith in chanting the holy name. So that we approach the holy name with the right attitude. So every limb of devotional service should be approached with the right attitude. And Shravanam is that one limb which infuses that right attitude. So Shravanam empowers all the other limbs by extolling their glories. When you hear about the glory of a particular limb, with that appreciation, when you do that limb, it becomes all the more potent. So ultimately, all these limbs run on the fuel of faith. So, it is true that Shukadeva Goswami made Parikshit Maharaj here for 7 days. But that would have surcharged Parikshit Maharaj so much that after that one holy name would have immediately had the potency to deliver. So therefore, when scriptures speak about the glories of holy name, you know, one holy name has the potential to destroy all kinds of sins that you have ever even imagined to have committed. So that refers to a holy name which is surcharged with so much faith. So therefore, even though he has established the Kirtanam as the topmost limb, but nevertheless, that Kirtanam gets empowered when the glories of that Kirtanam is properly heard. And one feels completely convinced of the necessity to chant for one's own spiritual survival. With that attitude, when he chants even one name, that becomes so potent. So therefore, Shravanam is that which empowers all the limbs. Therefore, it's not a contradiction that at the outset only Shukadeva Goswami has established that Harinam Sankirtan is the topmost, but at the same time he made Parikshit Maharaj here for 7 days. So hearing for 7 days is not a big thing, but that's all he had to perfect his life. And all that 7 days he heard, and definitely he would have chanted before leaving. So, yes, Harshit, you want to ask something? Can you pass the mic?
Parikshit Maharaj spoke to Uttara also, no, after that.
Yeah.
So in a way he did Kirtanam also.
Kirtanam also, correct. Yeah. That's why he spoke.
Can you pass the mic, Prabhuji?
Just to comment on this, adding this Anukirtan, in chanting there are 10 offenses. To chant is not so easy.
Yeah.
And a lot of things have to do with proper understanding. Unless we hear all that Tattva Vibhrama, all that cannot go away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we see from beginning to 10 offenses are there. If you don't understand the proper position of Krishna, if you don't understand, you may do a lot of offenses. Also, you don't understand Tattva of the Holy Name.
Mm.
So when we study Bhagavatam from first hand, we see all these Tattvas are getting clarified.
Yeah.
And then second offense, we see fourth offense, fifth offense, sixth offense, seventh offense, eighth offense, considering it karma kand. So all these things are related with only, only by hearing from proper source. Then there is proper understanding of tattva, then you know we do the activity.
So that's why, you know, the process of hearing is very vital. So he says that Harer Namanu Kirtanam is the topmost. So Parikshit Maharaj might say that I agree with you that that is the most potent thing, but is it so potent that it can deliver me in 7 days? I have just 7 days to live. So is it so potent that in 7 days it will deliver me? So in response, Sukadeva Goswami speaks about the story of Katvanga Maharaj. You all know the story of Katvanga Maharaj, right? Kim pramattasya bahubir parokshairhaya nairiha varam muhurtam viditam gatate shreyase yataha. Kim bahubir haya nairihi. What is the use of many, many years? Pramattasya, for a person whose convictions are all material, whose goal is material, so he is completely materially absorbed. Parokshahi, all the years will pass while he is watching it, all those years will pass uselessly without bestowing any benefit, because his convictions are all material convictions. What is the goal of life? Some material goal. The means to attain it is some material abhideya. So what is the use if such a person has long, long years? All that will lead to accumulation of more and more material impressions, which will lead to many, many more lifetimes. Varam muhurtam viditam gatate shreyase yataha. But it is better to know that one has that one moment has passed uselessly, because then one can inquire into the best engagement. Whereas if one comes to the conclusion that I am passing my time uselessly, when one comes to that conclusion, then even one moment is sufficient. He can go to the bona fide person and ask how I should engage my life and engage it, and in a moment it can bestow the benefit. So varam muhurtam, it is better to have one muhurta. Literally one muhurta means about 48 minutes. But many times these kshana, muhurta, lava are not used in the technically, you know, perfect sense. They are used in the sense of one moment. Sometimes whatever fits the meter or whatever. So there is one verse in Bhagavatam which says, Tulayama Lavenapi Naswargam Napunarbhavam. And another verse says, Kshana Ardhenapi Tulaye. That uses the unit of Kshana. Another verse says, conveying the same meaning, One uses lava, one uses kshana, and here uses muhurta. So it's used in the sense of a moment, not in the literal sense of 48 minutes. Oh, lava. So lava matra means how many? Let me try to find out what, how long is a lava. Not like that. Sometimes, of course, in the third canto, 11th chapter, there is a description of the time, measurement of time. There, it's used in a very literal sense. But otherwise, they are not so literal. They indicate the, they are emphasizing the importance of that association. Not, the emphasis is not on exactly the duration of that. So, he says that one muhurta is sufficient actually. If one knows, if one comes to the conclusion that I am passing my life uselessly, then one muhurta is sufficient for him to perfect his life. You don't need many, many years. So, then, he says, Katvango nama rajarshir jyatve yattamiha yushaha muhurtat sarvam srijya gatavana bayam harim. So Parikshit Maharaj may say, one muhurta. Do you literally mean one muhurta or, you know, are you just trying to exaggerate or? So he says, no, Katvango Maharaj actually had only one muhurta. How many of you don't know the story of Katvanga Maharaj? Okay. So it's given, Prabhupada writes, I will just summarize. So Katvanga Maharaj was a very powerful king. Once the demigods, as usual, had a battle with the demons, and they needed a very powerful general to lead their army. So they all came down to Bhumandal and requested Katvanga Maharaj to assist them. He was a very valorous king. So he fought very valorously and won the battle for the demigods. So they became very pleased with Katvanga Maharaj and they asked, what benediction do you want? So he said, I don't want any specific benediction, but if you could just tell me how much time I have to live, because I want to invest that time in for my deliverance. So they checked all the charts and he said, oh, you have one muhurta to live. And he said, okay, thank you very much. Immediately, he did the needful, performed devotional service, perfected his life, went back home back to Godhead. That's the story of Katvanga Maharaj. It comes in the 9th canto. The story of Katvanga Maharaj comes in detail. In little more detail. So, that's the story of Katvanga Maharaj. Actually, so, Shukadeva Goswami is quoting it in the first canto also. Don't you know the story of Katvanga Maharaj? He was also a king like you. He was very powerful. He could assist the demigods. And the demigods told that you have just one muhurta to live. And he perfected his life. So, that's what he is indicating here. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport, a responsible man means he is not always absorbed in his immediate needs, but works for the attainment of better next life. So, responsibility means to not always be concerned about our prayers, as Prabhupada says. Immediate gratification. Responsibility means to sacrifice immediate gratification for long-term betterment. So, even in common society, even in regular material society, they appreciate it. So, materially successful people have been those who have compromised their immediate gratification and gone for some higher goals. So, it's all the more appreciated in the spiritual circles when one gives up one's the more one is willing to give up the immediate gratification and go for the long-term benefit, to that extent, one achieves that goal very easily. You will see in the next chapter how, you know, there are one class of people who are called Kramamuktas, who go for gradual liberation. Their ultimate goal is liberation, but they are little distracted. They want to achieve that goal after finishing off their little bit enjoyment desires. Both they want. Because desires are not always black and white. It's not that you have desire for the highest goal, immediately all the intermediate desires vanish. It's not like that. It needs lot of inner strength and substance to actually vanquish all the intermediate desires and just focus on the highest desire. So, to the extent those intermediate desires are tolerated and one goes for the highest goal, to that extent he is appreciated, because to he will achieve that goal that much more faster. So, Katvanga Maharaj, he immediately applied himself to performing devotional service, and immediately in one muhurta he achieved lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that's what is indicated here. So Prabhupada is also writing the same thing. A responsible man means he is not always absorbed in his immediate needs, but works for the attainment of better next life. So great were the Rajarshis like Katvanga Maharaj, that in spite of stressful Kshatriya duties, they were always conscious of their prime duty. So, this is very important. One should always be conscious of the prime duty. However stressful one's other services might be, but one should not compromise the prime duty of investing in developing a sweet relationship with the Supreme Lord through the process of Shravanam Kirtanam. So, one should always not compromise. So later Prabhupada speaks about the story of Katvanga Maharaj, and then he says, therefore Parikshit Maharaj was also encouraged to execute the prime duty of hearing the glories of Krishna. That is the prime duty. Otherwise, how much ever stressful one's services might be, ultimately the nourishment comes from hearing and chanting. And hearing about chanting also. And hearing about other services. Whatever it may be. Ultimately, hearing should go on. Like that. And then he says, Tava pyetarhi kauravya saptaham jivitavadi upakalpaya tatsarvam tavad yat samparayikam. He says, O Kauravya, O descendant of Kurus, Tava api etar hi saptaham jivitavadi. You don't have one muhurta. You have 7 full days. That's a long time. Upakalpaya tatsarvam tavadyat samparayikam. Therefore, make all the necessary arrangements to prepare yourself for your passing. So that at the end of it, you achieve a very favorable destination. So, Srila Prabhupada here writes in the purport, indirectly, Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging Parikshit Maharaj to take shelter of the sound representation. That's what is his suggestion. That's evident from the way Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj spent the rest of their time. That's what Prabhupada is indicating. Indirectly, Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging Parikshit Maharaj to take shelter of the sound representation of the Supreme Lord, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Prabhupada, commenting on this word, Samparayikam. So, Samparayikam, Prabhupada translates as rituals for the next life, in this word-to-word meaning. Prabhupada says, these rituals are not just formal rituals, but there are some favorable conditions which are needed to absorb oneself at the time of death. So, these are not some very material formulas. So samparayitam means establishing anukulyasa sankalpo, accepting an environment or an ambience which is favorable to remember the Supreme Lord. So I have not seen, because I was not in bhakti at that time, but I have heard that once there was a brahmachari at Radha Gopinath temple. His name was Stoka Krishna Prabhu. So some of you would have probably heard about Stoka Krishna Prabhu. So at some stage he had some health issues, and he changed his ashram and he got married. And he was almost very soon after he got married, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. So he was very, very close to Maharaj and all the brahmacharis of Gopinath temple. So at that time he had a newly born daughter. And I think when his wife was pregnant, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And she eventually delivered the child also before he passed away. So he passed away. Maharaj arranged for him to spend the last days of his life in Gopinath temple only. So all brahmacharis and devotees, they used to come and do kirtan for him. And just when he was, the doctor said that, you know, he's going to leave any time. So I was told that Maharaj mentioned that, you know, the wife and the child should be, should not be inside the room. Because all sudden then it's like a, it reminds one of one's bodily relationship. Even though the wife might be a very exalted devotee, but nevertheless it can remain. So he ensured that all the brahmacharis surrounded Stoka Krishna Prabhu, and the photos and Giriraj's garland and garlands from Vrindavan and everything, you know. Tavadyat samparayikam. All that is needed to help that person remember Vrindavan, Krishna's lotus feet, Radharani, that was all, you know, that ambience was completely created so that one could remember Krishna. So Prabhupada writes, these are not, these rituals are not just formal, but some favorable conditions which are needed to absorb oneself at the time of death. So therefore this is very important. So in one sense, Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami has answered all the questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj. What should be done, what should not be done, what should be heard, what should not be heard, what should be remembered, what should not be remembered, everything has been answered. You have to ultimately take shelter of bhakti, and within bhakti you have to, it would be nice if you take shelter of kirtanam, Harer Namanu Kirtanam, and that has all the potency. And don't think that you don't have sufficient time. Actually, you have more than sufficient time to perfect this path. So, do whatever is needful to do it. This is in conclusion, whether it's about a person who is, the duty of a person who is living, or the duty of a person who is going to leave his body. This is what I recommend. If you can absorb yourself in this, then success is guaranteed. So in one sense, it has been answered. He has very firmly established bhakti. But he has not established this bhakti based on a very thorough analysis of all the other paths and very systematically established. Because Parikshit Maharaj has offered his heart to Sukadeva Goswami. He has accepted him as his spiritual master. So therefore, he doesn't, without much elaboration, he says that, you know, you should do bhakti only. But apart from Parikshit Maharaj, so many other people had gathered there. So many other exalted personalities were gathered. And not everyone had the pure devotional Shraddha. Even though they were exalted, but they had all kinds of mixed notions about the goal of life and the means to attain that goal. The prayojan and abhideya. So, depending on one's prayojan, the abhideya also changes. It could change, it need not necessarily change. Because it is also mentioned, akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udaradi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So, whatever may be one's desire, it can be accomplished by performing jnana karma di anavrata bhakti. Bhakti which is not covered by jnana or karma or yoga, whatever it may be. So, whatever may be one's prayojan, the abhideya need not necessarily change. If one can perform jnana karma dhyanavarta bhakti and fulfill their other desires also. But generally, when the prayojan is different, the abhideya also generally changes. People who want liberation, generally they are inspired to practice jnana yoga or ashtanga yoga like that. And people who want some material benefits are inspired to practice karma yoga. Generally it's the case, unless they come in touch with a devotee and their heart changes. So, in that way, so many people were assembled there and not everyone was of the same opinion that bhakti is the, sadhana bhakti is the highest sadhana and prema is the highest prayojan. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami in detail describes the other paths also. The other popular opinions which people had in their mind. What should someone do? What is the highest goal of life? Some people may say, liberation. Liberation is the topmost goal. Some people are convinced. Impersonal liberation. Liberation means what? To merge with the Supreme Lord, to merge with the Brahman, that is liberation. That is the highest prayojan. And how do you attain it? Some people may say jnana yoga, some people may say ashtanga yoga. There are, like that, there are many ways to attain it. So, this was one of the popular opinions that the highest goal of life is liberation and the means to attain it is to perform Ashtanga Yoga. So, he starts describing this path of Ashtanga Yoga to attain liberation. How does a practitioner, what is this path? How does a practitioner practice it? And by practicing, how does he attain liberation? All of that is described in minute, with minute details. And then later he will establish that how bhakti is superior to all these other paths and prema is superior to all these other prayojana. So that way it doesn't sound too dogmatic. Which is the best bhakti? Why? Because I say so. You agree? Don't ask questions. No intelligent person wants to accept things like that. Even Prabhupada writes, we read in yesterday's purport, that there must be reasonable explanation coming from the Guru. But at the same time, the reception is not necessarily through intellect, but it is through submissive service. So submissive service must also be there from the side of the submissive service and inquiry must be there on the side of the receiver. But the one who is giving must also give reasonable explanation. Because the intellect also has to be convinced. Because only a convinced intellect can convince the mind. Indriyani paranyahur indriyadya param manasa manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastu sah. So ultimately intellect has the has a tremendous capacity to convince the mind. Otherwise, mind becomes very obstinate sometimes. So, on the level of intellect also, a person has to be convinced. So therefore there must be reasonable explanations. So Shukadeva Goswami goes on, now we will go and evaluate the popular theories, the popular opinions. What do you think is the prayojan? Liberation. How to attain it? Ashtanga Yoga. Okay, let me speak about it. So in two chapters, he will elaborately describe two types of Ashtanga Yoga that are practiced and how both of them attain liberation, that he will describe. Then in the third chapter, he will evaluate the path of demigod worship. So like that, he will evaluate each and every path and finally very conclusively establish how bhakti is superior to all these paths. Now that is not dogmatic. That is a very systematic presentation. It is very appealing. So when the other person sees that, oh, this person knows perfectly about my path, then he gets some, because many times we say that, oh, Ashtanga Yoga and all doesn't work. Okay, what do you know about Ashtanga Yoga? You know what, we don't have to know anything about Ashtanga. I don't know anything. I just know that, you know, it doesn't work. Why it doesn't work? You know what, I don't know all that, you know, I just know that it doesn't work. You know, no one becomes very impressed with that kind of an explanation. Unless that person has full faith in you. Otherwise, it becomes wrong to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. Ninth offense. So, to create faith, sometimes you have to not sound so dogmatic. Otherwise, it will never create any faith. Some reasonable explanations may be needed. If he is seeking it, many times people are happy just receiving some prasadam. You may not have to explain in so much detail. But when they are seeking it, you can't just shut them up. You have to give some reasonable explanations. That's a very important component of faith building. Then after the faith is built, then you can give pure devotional teachings. Otherwise, you should definitely be equipped to give some basic understanding based on Bhagavatam. Everything is there in Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is now going to speak elaborately about the path of liberation, about the path of Ashtanga Yoga, about demigod worship, about Virat worship. In the next 12-13 chapters, 10 chapters of second canto and the next 3-4 chapters of third canto, there are 5 descriptions of Virat Roop, even though it's an imaginary form. 5 descriptions of Virat Roop. There are so many descriptions of Ashtanga Yoga and all that. So one might wonder, why in Bhagavatam there is so much description of all these other paths? So that's one thing that we will discuss for some time and try to understand. Because we thought that Bhagavatam is Amala Puran. At the beginning only it said Dharma Projita Gaita Otra Paramo Narmat Saranam Satam. At the outset only it kicks out all kinds of false religion. False religion means what? Anything that gives less than prema is false. That is Bhagavatam's standard. But in the second canto only, almost it seems like the whole canto speaks about Virat Roop and the path of Ashtanga Yoga to attain impersonal liberation. So, how do we understand? At the beginning it says that all false type of religion is, there is no place for false religion in Bhagavatam. It speaks only about bhakti. Every syllable of Bhagavatam speaks about bhakti. So how do you reconcile? So we have to understand the first reason. Srimad Bhagavatam is not just for the Paramahamsas. Even though it is called the Paramahamsa Samhita,
It is called the Paramahamsa Samhita, but it is not just for the Paramahamsas. Let's try to evaluate it. Bhagavatam was spoken by so many speakers. Who are the speakers who spoke Bhagavatam? Shukadeva Goswami, Suta Goswami, Vyasadeva wrote it, Maitreya spoke. Like that, so many devotees spoke. Let's take three of them and try to understand why did they speak or write this Bhagavatam. You see the case of Vyasadeva. You remember the first canto, 7th chapter. Anartho Pashamam Sakshat Bhakti Yogam Adokshaje Lokasya Janato Vidvam Chakre Satvata Samhitam. Vidvan Vyasadeva Chakre Satvata Samhitam. He compiled this Satvata Samhita Bhagavatam for what purpose? Anartho Pashamam. What is the meaning of Anartho Pashamam? To mitigate the anarthas from the heart. And what is the means? Bhakti Yoga Madokshaje. The means is Bhakti Yoga, devotional service. Lokasya Ajanato. The people of this world do not know it, they do not appreciate it. Chakri Satvata Samhitam. Therefore, he compiled Bhagavatam. So, who is the target audience for Vyasadeva? Ordinary people of Kali, right? Shukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam. Why did he speak? Yes, Swanubhavam, Akhila Shruti Saramekam, Adhyatma Deepam, Adhitirshatam, Tamoandam, Samsarinam Karanayaha Purana Guhyam, Tam Vyasasuna Mutayami Gurum Muninam. He says, Adhitirshatam, Tamoandam. What is the meaning? Atitirshatam means those who are eager to cross over tamo andam, the deep dark ignorance of this samsara. Samsarinam means those who are already suffering the pangs of samsara. Karunaya, having a deep compassionate feeling towards them. Aha, he spoke. Purana Guhyam, this most secret Purana. So who is the target for Shukadeva Goswami? People suffering in this samsara. Maitreya spoke. Why did he speak? Soham nanam shulla sukaya dukkam mahatgatanam viramaya tasya pravartaye bhagavatam puranam. Nanam, people of this world, shulla sukaya, for insignificant pleasure, mahat dukkam gatam. Gatanam. They experience lot of troubles to experience meager pleasures of this material world. Tasya viramaya. In order to stop this useless endeavor and save them, pravartaye bhagavatam puranam. He spoke the Bhagavat Puran. So who is the target audience for Maitreya? Suffering people of this material world, not Paramahamsas. But still Bhagavatam is called Paramahamsa Samhita. This is described by Rupa Goswami in his Nectar of Instruction. Syat Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitapya Vidya Pittopatatta Rasanasya Nandavachikanu Kintvabarad Anudinam Kalu Saiva Jishta Swadvi Kramad Bhavati Tadgata Molahantri. He says, Syat Krishna Nama Charita Adi. Krishna's name, form, pastimes, glories, etc. For a Pittopatasya Rasanasya na Rochikanu. Just like for a person whose tongue has been afflicted with, who has been afflicted with jaundice, his tongue cannot taste the sweet sugar cane juice. It tastes very bitter for him. But in the traditional times, that was the only cure for jaundice. he had to drink it to overcome the diseased state of jaundice. So what he should do? Adarad anudinam kalusa eva jushta. With great respect and every day he should drink that very same thing. So how would he know that the medicine is working or not? Swadhi kramat bhavati. That very same bitter sugarcane juice will start tasting less and less bitter, and at some point it will actually start tasting sweet. So how does he know that the jaundice is completely gone? When it tastes really relishable and nectarian, and then it's no longer a medicine, it's a luxury now, because he can perfectly taste that juice. So Bhagavatam is called Paramahamsa Samhita because the Paramahamsas can perfectly taste its actual taste. But the conditioned souls of this material world, they need it more. Just like the person afflicted with jaundice, he needs it for survival. Whereas a person who is completely healthy, for him it's a luxury product. Give me one more, you know, drink it and enjoy. Whereas a person who is afflicted with jaundice, it's a question of his life and death. Even though he may not be relishing it, it may be tasting very bitter for him. So therefore, because Bhagavatam is not for, it's for everyone, especially for the conditioned soul, and the conditioned souls are absorbed in so many other things, they need to be attracted. Someone is absorbed in thinking that liberation, someone is absorbed thinking that material sense gratification is the topmost prayojan. If to them you go and tell, no, just surrender to Krishna directly. If you directly tell this, then Bhagavatam would also be committing the ninth offense. To instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. It can't be, because those people are the very target of Bhagavatam. Isn't it? Samsarinam. Karunayaha. Anartho Pashamam Sakshat. You know, those are the people who are the target audience of Bhagavatam. So unless it gives them something which is attractive to them, they will not give a patient hearing to anything that Bhagavatam has to say. So we can't say that I have, if someone comes and he says, I really want to become a great businessman, can you help me? You may choose to say, we have nothing to help such person at all, you please go away. You may say, yeah, it's right in one sense, we are all anyabhilashita shunya devotees, that is true, but we lose a very valuable opportunity. Yes, you know, if he would have been encouraged to take up to worshipping the Supreme Lord, and eventually by association of pure-hearted devotees, his desires would have also been reformed. But by sending him back, we lose a very valuable opportunity to give him pure devotional service. So Bhagavatam teaches us, by through such descriptions, it attracts those people who have an inclination for this, but eventually to give them pure devotional service only, nothing less than that. No one who learns Ashtanga Yoga through Bhagavatam will ever become an Ashtanga Yogi. No one who learns Jnana Yoga through Bhagavatam will never become a Jnana Yogi. Similarly, no one who receives the holy name or the process of bhakti through a pure practitioner of bhakti, even though initially maybe for material benefit, will ever practice it, will ever continue to practice it for material benefit, if he continues to associate with the devotees. So this we should understand. So Bhagavatam is not just for Paramahamsas. Bhagavatam is for everyone. It wants to attract all kinds of people. So therefore, Ishvara Sadhya Vridhyava Rudyate Trakritabir Sushru Shabuttachanat. So when one Adarad Anusdhyam Kalusai Vajushta, then the Lord enters the heart of that person. When he becomes qualified to become a Paramahamsa, then he can perfectly relish Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, Bhagavatam has these two benefits. We will see in the next few chapters. Punantite Vishaya Vidushitashayam Vrajanti Tacharana Saroruhantikam Pibanti Ye Bhagavata Atmanas Satam Katamritam Shravana Puteshu Sambritam. Two benefits. One who drinks this nectarian beverage of Srimad Bhagavatam through their ears, they get two benefits. If they are not yet Paramahamsas, if they are samsaris, then what happens? Punantite Vishaya Vidushita Ashayam. Their hearts, which are filled with impressions of material sense gratification, that is completely purified. And they become Paramahamsas. But if he is an if he is already a Paramahamsa, what happens? Vrajanti Tacharana Saroruha Antikam. He is immediately transported to the lotus feet of the Lord. Ishvara Sadhyo Hridya Varudyate. So therefore, Bhagavatam facilitates both kinds of people. Those who have not yet perfected their lives by acting as a medicine, and those who have perfected their lives by acting as a nectarian beverage for their relish. So that's the first point. That why Bhagavatam speaks about all these topics? To attract people. Because Bhagavatam is not just for Paramahamsas. It should have some subject matter for those who are not Paramahamsas, but with the intention of making them into Paramahamsas. So Bhagavatam is teaching us preaching strategies. How we should, what should be the mode. Second reason, different people have different qualifications. Not everyone is qualified for pure devotional service. So for those who do not have qualification for pure devotional service, you can't directly give them pure devotional service. You have to first give them the faith for pure devotional service. So you all might remember from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, when Rudra Goswami speaks about the qualification, when he says that there is no material disqualification for bhakti. So he says that the shastras say that who is qualified to take up to bhakti? So he says, numatrasya adhikarita. If he is a human being, he can practice bhakti. So everyone is qualified. But having said that, he also speaks about qualification for sadhana bhakti. What is that qualification? Jata shraddho matkatasu. Aryadritchaya matkatado. Jata shraddhostu yakpuman. Namurvenno nati sattu bhakti yogosya siddhida. So, there is a qualification that one must have had sufficient association with devotees and must have acquired favorable impressions which are ready to transform into Shraddha. But if the prerequisite is not there, then he will not directly accept Bhakti. So therefore, he has to be prepared to accept Bhakti. But in the preparation stage, you have to give him something what he can appreciate, but which has some connection to Bhakti. So Bhagavatam does that by speaking about all these other paths. But eventually to give him Shuddha Bhakti only and nothing less than that. So, Bhagavatam also says, Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyata yavata. Matkata shravanadavva shraddha yavanna jayate. If that shraddha towards Krishna Kata has not yet dawned, then he should not directly give up his other practices and take up immediately to bhakti. Because shraddha is not there, it will not work. So therefore, tells him, aapka shraddha kisme hai? Varnashram mein hai kya? Oh, varnashram ke bare mein hai Bhagavatam mein. Aapka shraddha kisme hai? You have shraddha in Ashtanga Yoga. Oh, Shukadeva Goswami speaks about Ashtanga Yoga. Huh? So, whatever you are interested in, it's there in Bhagavatam. Come. Come in and go out as a devotee. That is Bhagavatam. So, not everyone who touches Bhagavatam already has that prior Shraddha. So, it cannot directly speak about just every single verse will glorify the Supreme Lord. It can't be like that. So, therefore, it gives them something according to their qualification just to hook them to the personality of Bhagavatam. Because once Shraddha can change when there is an attraction to a personality. So, attraction to a particular, you can say, ideology. Attraction to a particular ideology comes only after attraction to a personality. If there is no attraction to a personality, one will not buy into that ideology. One will not be willing to sacrifice one's life for a particular ideology. People got attracted to Hitler and they bought the ideology of fascism. People liked the ideology of Karl Marx and the personality of Karl Marx and who was it who propagated it? Lenin and all those people. Their personalities were attractive. So, when they got attracted to the personality, they bought in their ideology. If Hitler would have preached some other ideology, they would have accepted because he was such a charismatic personality. So, therefore, yes, bro. Can you pass the mic?
I agree with this point that attraction to
personally
ideology of bhakti comes by attraction to bhakta. But attraction to other ideologies
also comes through that only.
Attraction of personality, because sometimes everybody has their own ideologies and whatever ideologies whoever speaks, they get attracted to that person because they have their own ideology.
Correct.
So they are maybe attracted to their own personality.
That is why you have to be in touch with the books to verify. That's why Prabhupada has given the Guru Sadhu Shastra. So the initial attraction may be to the person. But later, the faith is protected by these three tripartite facility where you can always cross-check between the three. So, but if one takes up to an ideology from a person and then sticks only to that person, and if that person deviates, then it's a problem. But that's why the faith of the devotees are protected by giving them three pramanas which have to concur: Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Even though the person could have taken up to devotional service by getting attracted to a particular sadhu, but at some point if that sadhu's ideology deviates, then there is always the means to check through sadhu or through guru, the pramana of guru and shastra.
Okay, what you say is okay. My question was different. I was saying, is that really that attraction to ideology comes by attraction to personality only? This is my question.
Primarily, the initial attraction is through personality. Like even in our preaching, the boys first get attracted to the preacher. Then they are willing to hear what the preacher has to say. But if that preacher himself has a very repulsive personality, he does not speak with them nicely, does not treat them nicely, then they will not be willing to buy that ideology, except for some very rare souls. So the initial attraction is to the person, and the subsequent attraction only is to the ideology. Generally, that's the general sequence. That's how bhakti also comes. First through impressions, and then the shraddha to ideology comes.
Bhakti, I understand it. But about other ideologies, sometimes we see, I had a question about other ideologies. As far as bhakti is concerned, there is no doubt that, you know, it comes by the attraction to devotees and the personalities. But about other ideologies?
Generally, it's like that. Generally, it's people, any wonderful ideologies you have been propagated through highly influential people. So people got attracted to that influential person and then bought the ideology. So Karl Marx wrote, but then there were other very influential people who had the capacity to influence people. So when they carried this ideology, it spread en masse. So to spread any ideology, you know, there must be a person who is capable of influencing, either through his purity, charisma, something. Gandhiji also, yeah. Like that. So here, Bhagavatam is also a personality. So it's attracting these people by giving them, by seemingly giving them something that they want, but then eventually tricking them to give them Shuddha Bhakti. That is the second reason. That not everyone who approaches Bhagavatam is qualified for Shuddha Bhakti. The third is, any Mahapuran has to discuss 10 topics. We saw Atra Sargo Visargasya Sthanam Poshanam Utaya Manvantareshanu Kata Nirodha Mukti Rashaya. So these 10 topics are not 10 topics of Bhagavatam alone. These 10 topics have to be there in any literature for it to qualify as a Mahapurana. We say that there are 18 Mahapuranas. So for any literature to qualify as a Mahapurana, all these 10 topics have to be there. But the speciality of Bhagavatam is that each of these topics is discussed with the sole purpose of glorifying the 10th topic. The Bhagavatam itself admits it. Dashamasya Vishuddhyartam Navanamiha Lakshanam Varanayanti Mahatmana Shrutena Artena Cha Anjasa. So, Shrutena Goswami says, Mahatmana Anjasa Varanayanti, the great devotees such as Vidura and Maitreya described properly Navanamiha Lakshanam, the other 9 topics. Dashamasya Vishuddhyartam, in order to impart the highest knowledge of the 10th topic. That is the sole reason. Even though so many avatars and so many Purusha avatars, so much description is there, but in the end, with all these descriptions, the purpose of Bhagavatam is to attract one to Krishna. How we may not understand? We might wonder, why not 12 cantos of only Krishna Katha? Is there less material? Krishna is performing so many pastimes. He is still performing. Only some very few pastimes have been mentioned in Bhagavatam, even though that itself spans 90 chapters. But Shukadeva Goswami could have as well described all 12 cantos of only Krishna Katha. But it's not like that. One needs to prepare the people to accept the 10th canto with the right mood. Many times, the success of a very good feast lies not just in how meticulously the feast has been prepared, but how much appetite the people who are going to have that feast have. What is the most important factor of a particular feast? How the previous meal was? And when was that meal taken? That's a very important factor. Otherwise, one cannot relish the feast at all. Many times when people hear that tomorrow, you know, at this time the feast is there, they mentally, you know, I will skip the next meal. So that, you know, I have proper appetite, one meal I will eat nicely. So, the appetite must be there. So, the other 9 topics are so scientifically presented that it creates the perfect appetite in the 10th canto appears. How we may not know? I give this example. Like this morning you all took darshan of Shishi Radha Vrindavan Vihari, Shishi Radha Van Vihari darshan. So every day we take darshan. And but what you may not consciously notice is that at strategic positions there are focus lights present, which are shining on the various parts of their lordship's body, so that we can have a proper experience while taking darshan. So, but what if someday some of these focus lights stop functioning? So, then you will not be able to perfectly appreciate the beauty of the Lord. Not that the Lord becomes any less beautiful. Vrindavan Vihari and Radharani are always in the transcendental beauty. Their beauty does not diminish. Whether the focus light is shining on them or not doesn't really matter for them. But our ability to appreciate the beauty of their lordships is very much compromised if the focus lights are not properly functional, or if they are improperly situated. Koi gumadiya focus light ko aise aise, then also we cannot appreciate. So all the focus lights must be functioning and they must be at their position for us to perfectly appreciate the Supreme Lord. The same way, these other 9 topics are like 9 focus lights. They have to be at their strategic positions to create the right appetite for us to appreciate the 10th canto pastimes. And only in Srimad Bhagavatam are these other 9 topics discussed in such a conscious way to turn our focus to the 10th canto pastimes. And just like we may not appreciate, we may not really understand how an appetizer works, similarly we may not appreciate how on earth, by hearing a description about the Virat form, am I going to develop affection for Krishna? We may not appreciate. How by hearing about Ashtanga Yoga, am I going to get attracted to bhakti towards the Supreme Lord? We may not appreciate. But we should have faith in the in the acharyas, in Sukadeva Goswami. Just like in a Bengali meal, you will see first they will have some bitter shukta or something. You eat it, that's what you need to eat in order to, it appetizes and gets your digestive juices to flow. But you may not appreciate, you may wonder, this first item, why they are giving some itna kadwa kadwa hai. You may think like that. But a chef perfectly knows what should be served first, what should be served second. Like in restaurants, they may serve some soup or something like that to appetize you. Another example I give is sometimes, let's say I want to glorify someone. Say, our Advaita Prabhu, let's say I want to glorify to someone. He is, this Advaita Prabhu is from COEP. You are from COEP? So he is from CYEP. But the person who is hearing may not know what is CYEP. So I am actually trying my best to glorify Advaita Prabhu, but that person is not at all appreciating. So what I should do? I should glorify CYEP. You know what kind of a university it is, what type of a college, you know, how the people passing out from that college, you know, they make wonderful careers. You know, the best students of Maharashtra, they choose this college. Like that, you know, when I glorify CYEP, then that person can perfectly appreciate Advaita Prabhu. So from a superficial point of view, you may see that it's a glorification of CYEP. But if that glorification is not there, proper appreciation of Advaita Prabhu cannot take place, isn't it? So the same way, these other 9 topics are very scientifically presented so that it creates the perfect appreciation of the 10th canto. 10th canto pastimes. So Bhagavatam itself very much acknowledges this fact in the 12th canto before concluding. It is mentioned, Kalimala Samhati Kalano Akilesho Harir Itaratra Na Giyate Hyabhikshnam Iha Tu Punar Bhagavan Ashesha Murti Paripatito Anupadam Kata Prasangaihi. So he says that the Supreme Lord Hari, who annihilates all the sins accumulated in many, many lifetimes. Itaratra na giyate hi abhikshnam. Itaratra means in the other literatures, other than Bhagavatam, he is not constantly glorified. Iha tu means but in this literature. He says, punaha, again and again, paripatito, anupadam, in every single pada, in every single syllable, Bhagavan Ashesha Murti, the supreme, unlimited supreme personality of Godhead, he is constantly and abundantly, in every single syllable, he is glorified only in Bhagavatam. And not in any other literature. So therefore, when Bhagavatam describes Ashtanga Yoga, even the description of Ashtanga Yoga is meant to ultimately create an appreciation of Krishna's lotus feet only. Even if it may describe Virat Roop, that description of Virat Roop is also described in such a way that it creates an appreciation of the lotus feet of Krishna only. Therefore, Jiva Goswami says, every single syllable of Bhagavatam is glorifying Krishna and nothing else. Even if it may be a description of the genealogical lines, Vamshavalis and all that, we may not understand how it's going to create that appreciation for Krishna, but it does. Just like we may not understand how eating that shukta is going to make my eating experience so wonderful, but we may not appreciate. But the chef knows, you know, he has very scientifically prepared that meal, and he knows what should go first, what should go second. You just should have faith. That's all. Faith in the author. That's very important. Okay, there's so much more to speak on this part, but let's go to the next 4th reason. The 4th reason is that proper understanding of these topics lead to purification. That is very much necessary to understand the subsequent topics. In the 2nd canto, 7th chapter, there is a very pivotal verse. Mayam varnayato amushya ishvarasyanumodataha shrinyata shraddaya nityam mayayatmana muyyati. So this is like after Brahmaji describes to Narada Muni about creation and everything, he speaks this verse. This is the last verse he speaks to Narada Muni. And this you can say is like the Paribhasha Sutra of Cantos 2, 3, 4, 5. not mentioned by acharyas. That is a very pivotal verse. Prabhupada's purport is like very powerful. So there Brahmaji says, if the jiva nityam mayam varanayataha, if the jiva constantly describes maya, does not mean, you know, newspaper and other such things, avashya ishwarasya, in relation to the Supreme Lord, which means if one tries to understand this material energy of the Supreme Lord, how the Lord controls the material energy, manipulates it, creates the material world, maintains it, destroys it. Basically what it means is, if one tries to understand the Purushavatara feature of the Supreme Lord, develop an appreciation for how the Lord deals with this material world, anumodataha, and remembers maya. Remembers maya means in relationship with the Supreme Lord. Shraddhaya shrinvataha, and faithfully hears about maya in relationship with the Supreme Lord. Mayaya na muyyati, he will not be bewildered by maya. Prabhupada, in commenting on this verse, he says, I think you can, some of you can take turns to read one slide. External energy, yeah. So whoever has the mic, you know, you can take turns. One slide, you can read.
The science of learning a subject matter seriously is different from the sentiments of fanatics. The fanatics are fools. We consider the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy to be useful for them.
Useless for them.
Useless for them. And
then we make difference. Sorry.
And then they falsely claim to be higher participants in the internal energy of the Lord. But factually, the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy and the internal energy are equally good.
Mm.
On the other hand, those who are not completely free from the clutches of the Lord's external energy should devoutly hear regularly about the activities of the Lord in relation with the external energy.
Mm. So, those are not completely purified yet must devoutly hear these pastimes because they purify. Next slide, someone wants to read.
They should not foolishly jump up to the activities of the internal energy. Falsely attracted by the Lord's internal potencies, potential activities like his Rasalila. The chief reciters of the Bhagavatam are very much enthusiastic about the Lord's internal potential activities, and the pseudo devotees, absorbed in material sense enjoyment, falsely jump to that stage of liberated souls and thus fall down deeply into the clutches of external energy. Some of them think that to hear about the pastimes of the Lord means to hear about his activities with the gopis, or about his pastimes like lifting the Govardhan hill, and they have nothing to do with the Lord's plenary expansions as the Purushavataras and the pastimes of the creation, maintenance or annihilation of the material worlds.
But a pure devotee knows that there is no difference between the pastimes of the Lord, either in Rasalila or in creation, maintenance or destruction of the material world. Rather, the descriptions of such activities of the Lord as the Purushavataras are specifically meant for persons who are in the clutches of the external energy. Topics like the Rasalila are meant for the liberated souls and not for the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls, therefore, must hear with appreciation and devotion the Lord's pastime in relation with the external energy. And such acts are as good as the hearing of Rasalila in the liberated stage.
A conditioned soul should not imitate the activities of liberated souls. Lord Sri Chaitanya never indulged in hearing the Rasalila with ordinary men. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the science of God, the first 9 cantos prepare the ground for hearing the 10th canto.
They prepare the ground for hearing the 10th canto.
A pure devotee of the Lord, therefore, must begin reading or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning and not from the 10th canto.
we have several times been requested by some so-called devotees to take up the 10th canto immediately, but we have refrained from such an action because we wish to present Srimad Bhagavatam as a science of Godhead and not as a sensuous understanding for the conditioned souls. This is forbidden by such authorities as Sri Brahmaji. By reading and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam as a scientific presentation, the conditioned souls will gradually progress to the higher status of transcendental knowledge after being freed from the illusory energy based on sense enjoyment.
So it's a very revealing purport that Prabhupada writes here. That same verse purport, 2753. So therefore one should appreciate that a proper understanding of these previous topics, the other 9 topics, lead to the necessary purification that is needed for us to properly approach the 10th topic. So this is the 4th reason. And the 5th reason is that understanding of these topics is a prerequisite to understand the higher topics. So in the last but one, in the, as I mentioned, the second canto, third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, there is a lot of description about the Lord's activities with the material energy, creation, maintenance, etc. So, when Shukadeva Goswami is just going to go to the sixth canto, in one verse he is into the sixth canto, where he is going to speak about Poshanam, how the Lord protects his devotee, and other such personal pastimes of the Lord. Not just the Purushavataras. So before that, he writes this verse. He speaks this verse. When I read it for the first time, I was really shocked. So it's a prose verse. I will not read the verse, I will read the translation. And what I have marked in blue is where I want you to concentrate. I will read the translation. He says, in the beginning, that is the second and third cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, I have already described how one can progress on the path of liberation. Nivritti Lakshana Marga. Okay. In the Puranas, the universe divided into 14 parts is described as the gross body of the Supreme Lord Narayan, made of his material Maya. So this material universe is called the gross body of Lord Narayan, or the material body. If one reads the description of this external form of the Lord with great faith, which means if one reads the Virat Purusha with great faith, or if one hears about it or explains it to others and develops faith, bhakti and pure intelligence, so which means by hearing these topics one develops faith, bhakti and pure intelligence, then he will understand the topic of the Supreme Lord, which is like an Upanishad, very difficult to understand. So he says, the topics of Varaha, Narasimha, Vamana, Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, he says, their pastimes are like an Upanishad, very difficult to understand. But you can become qualified to understand them if you, with faith, try to understand the pastimes of the Purushavataras with respect to creation, maintenance and destruction, which he says is a relatively easier thing. To understand Virat Purusha and the Purushavataras is easy, he says. But to understand the pastimes of Krishna, Lord Ram and all these pastimes is very, very difficult. We understood it the opposite way, isn't it? The common understanding is, oh, it's so easy to understand the pastimes of Krishna or Lord Ram, Varahadev, Narasimhadev. But Purushavataras, Virat Prabhu and all, not so complicated like that. But he gives a very contradictory understanding. So, Prabhupada in the purport to this, he writes, the Krishna consciousness movement is pushing forward the publication of Srimad Bhagavatam as explained especially for the understanding of the modern civilized man to awaken him to his original consciousness. Without this consciousness, one melts into complete darkness. Whether one goes to the upper planetary systems or the hellish planetary systems, he simply wastes his time. Therefore, one should hear of the universal portion of the Virat form of the Lord as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. That will help one save himself from material conditional life and gradually elevate him to the path of liberation so that he can go back home, back to Godhead. So therefore, this is a prerequisite. And one last commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti I would like to read before we end this discussion. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in the 10th chapter of 2nd canto, for the third time, there is a description of the universal form. Already 2nd canto has only 10 chapters. In the 10 chapters only there are 3 descriptions of universal form, which spans over 5 chapters actually. 3 descriptions which spills over 5 chapters. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur himself feels the necessity. Definitely the readers of Bhagavatam would be wondering, why there is so much description of about the universal form. Especially, when it's well known that it's an imaginary form. It's not a real form. It's not transcendental form. Why again and again and again description of the universal form? So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes a very elaborate and interesting commentary on this. He writes, he takes the role of a reader and he says, why do you always speak about the universal form and the self? Why is there so little sweet discussion about the qualities and forms of the Leela Avataras? So he says, what you observe is true, Bhagavatam says. To whom should the topics about the Leela Avataras be taught with relish? Who is qualified to hear the Leela Avatar Katha? He says, those who have perfected bhakti or the Nitya Siddhas constantly play spontaneously in the sweet ocean of the Lord's beauty and pastimes. But those who are sleeping on the bed of bliss of sense pleasure and those who have fainted in the waves of suffering arising from karma cannot be woken up. How can pastimes of the Lord be taught to them? The crest jewel of Puranas, which is it? Bhagavad Purana, being most merciful, thinking of how to give instruction to make them into sadhaka bhaktas, constantly attempts by some trick or other to wake them up. Just as a limb burned by fire is given relief by fire, and a person haunted by a ghost is revived by a ghost mantra, so a jiva's absorption in the sleep of maya can be broken by topics concerning maya. But even though by the shower of nectar of the pastimes of the Lord obtained by the mercy of the devotees, the person sleeping in the happiness of maya or fainting in the suffering of karma wakes up, becomes drenched, revitalized, dances and rejoices blissfully, only those who obtain that great mercy become successful and not others. The low jivas desiring to cross the material world and have developed determination to take shelter at the lotus feet of Guru can be delivered by constantly hearing about the self. For this reason, there is repeated discussion of the self. Those who are faithful devotees of the Lord will relish the nectar of the whole Bhagavatam. This scripture does not speak about Bhagavan, though he is the main topic. Does not only speak about Bhagavan, though he is the main topic. It also speaks about the impersonal aspect of the Lord, Brahman, and his portion, Paramatma. It has been said in the beginning of this work, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. Thus, repeated discussion of the self is suitable for worshippers of Brahman and Paramatma. By this means, being most generous, Bhagavatam produces bhakti in even the worshippers of Brahman and Paramatma. So as we saw, not everyone is qualified to worship Bhagavan. But they have to be attracted also. Bhakti even appears in those who have reached the perfection in Brahman and Paramatma. It is shown in various verses. Yesterday we saw one verse. One verse is given here, Atma Ramas Chamuniyo. Another verse we saw yesterday. Which verse? Parinishtitopi Nairgunya Uttama Shloka Leelaya Grihita Cheta Rajarshe Akhyanam Idaditavan. Those persons, their sadhana and the result they achieve are not rejected by pure devotees, but looked upon with sympathy. This is a very important point. The sadhana of the lower practitioners, be they Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, is not rejected by a devotee, but is looked upon with sympathy. Because if you reject it as being impotent, then it would become which offense? Fourth offense. What is the fourth offense? To blaspheme the Vedic scriptures as scriptures in pursuance of the Vedic version. So we may think that, I don't blaspheme Vedic scriptures. Anytime have you observed? We may think like that. But we may not, for us, internally, our default program is that scripture means Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And anything related to Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Or at the most, scripture means bhakti scriptures. That is our default setting. Anything else according to us maybe is fit to be rejected. As devotees we have that kind of default setting. But that is actually Shruti Shastra Ninda. To think that this literature on Ashtanga Yoga is not helpful for me is not Ninda. But to think that this literature on Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga cannot help anyone at all is actually Ninda. Because these literatures are also born out of the breathing of Lord. They are also transcendental literature. So, we may not read them, we may not try to apply them, we may not think that these instructions given in these literatures are relevant for us. But to think that they are universally irrelevant is actually Shruti Shastra Ninda. So we should be careful to avoid committing this offense. How do we reconcile that in today's context that people may not
like using this Bhagavatam's preaching strategy, you know?
Yeah.
Like okay, take this and you come out as a devotee. But if you're talking about the modern context.
You should not tell them that.
No, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
But really, like if they have to take a Bhagavatam and read in the Ashtanga Yoga, because now most of the people in the modern world right now. None of them are nearly practicing Ashtanga Yoga.
Correct.
Or Jnana Yoga. I mean, not even
correct.
A percentage also.
Correct.
So then
we don't have to encourage them to practice Ashtanga Yoga by reading Bhagavatam.
Correct.
But if they are already very much interested in it, then you can tell them that Bhagavatam also speaks about Ashtanga Yoga. You might want to read.
That's what Puji. So my question was like, so it makes no sense telling them about Ashtanga. Just directly tell them about Bhakti only.
For someone who is anyway not interested in Ashtanga Yoga, you don't have to go and out and tell him about Ashtanga Yoga. That is not necessary. But if someone's goal of life is only practice Ashtanga Yoga, then you can understand. Oh, Bhagavatam also talks about Ashtanga Yoga. Like that. Krishna, who is completely full of sweetness in his form, qualities and pastimes and possesses dharma, jnana, bala and aishwarya, since he contains all avatars such as Matsya, Kurma and the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma as well, is worshipped by all types of devotee. So basically the point that Shalushna Chakradagur is making here is Krishna is Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He is a Samam Bonam. He is the source of all avatars. In the 10th canto it is described, whenever Krishna descends, whenever the avatari descends, all the avatars also descend with him. Because the avatari is full only along with all his avatars. So therefore, when he descends, all the avatars also descend. And Brahman and Paramatma is also a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmanohi Pratishta Aham, Krishna says. So therefore, when Bhagavatam speaks about Brahman and Paramatma, there is nothing wrong in it. Because it is a part of Krishna. If I describe the feet of Krishna, is it like, oh, you are deviating, you said this book talks about Krishna, but now you are talking about his feet. I mean, I am talking about his feet only. So I am talking about the beauty of his feet, so that you develop appreciation towards that personality. So therefore, Brahman and Paramatma and all the avatars also being part, very much the part of the avatari, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, therefore a description of them is also a glorification of Krishna only. So thus everything is consistent. That's how Shri Krishna Jagadagur concludes. Like that. So can someone take the microphone and quickly recollect the 5 points that we discussed? But before that, can someone first tell what is the theme of this discussion that we have been discussing for the last 1 hour or so? What is the theme? Why are we having such a long discussion? Please take the mic and share. Harshad Prabhu wants to share. So you have a question?
If Bhagavatam is Amal Puran, then why is there a description of universal form, the material energy throughout?
Different types of other sadhanas.
Other sadhanas throughout, yeah. Bhagavatam.
Yeah, why? That is the question.
That is the question.
Okay, what are the 5 different points that we discussed? Who wants to recollect? Acharatma.
First point is that Bhagavatam is not only for Paramahamsas. Paramahamsas can relish best, but actually it's a medicine for conditioned
souls. Medicine for conditioned souls. So conditioned souls need to be attracted. What is the second point? Anyone remembers? Advaita Prabhu.
Different people have different qualifications.
Not everyone is qualified for pure devotion. So if you directly speak about bhakti, one who is not qualified for devotion, it will become the 9th offense. To instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name, or it's not just glories of the holy name, glories of bhakti, anything. Without faith, giving him something can generate an inimical attitude in that person's heart. Therefore, one should first give the faith and then give the content. So therefore, Bhagavatam does exactly that. Not everyone is qualified. What is the third point that we discussed? Yes, bro.
Any Mahapuran has to discuss the 10 topics.
The 10 topics.
So the 9 topics in Bhagavatam actually is creating an appetite to appreciate the 10th.
10th topic. Okay. Yeah. That's the third reason. Fourth reason, who wants to share? Yes, Muktakesh Prabhu, you share.
That Paribhasha Sutra verse, Prabhupada says that all these things are ultimately...
But what was the theme? that we discussed through that.
Proper understanding of other stuff, it leads to purification.
Proper understanding actually leads to purification. As a fourth thing. What are the fifth reason? Last, anyone wants to share? Amol Prabhu.
Understanding of these topics is a prerequisite for understanding the higher topics.
Understanding of these topics is a prerequisite to understand the higher topics. So, like that, you know, it's important. There could be many more reasons. These are the five reasons I could think about. So, yeah, your question.
What was the difference between reason 4 and reason 5? It like appeared little.
Reason 4 is it leads to purification. But it leads to purification. No, more or less, okay. You can say more or less the same only. One sense. Anything else? Okay. So, now with that prelude, we will see what Shukadeva Goswami has to say about this path of liberation. We'll continue after a short break. 5 minutes, we'll take a short break. And then we'll
now directly get and just stay focused in the discussion that Shukadeva Goswami. So if I lose focus, you just remind me. Sometimes you get carried away. Of course, till now whatever you spoke was planned, you know, I do it every time. But from now on, if you know, I get carried away discussing a particular topic, so you just remind me and then we'll come back on course. Otherwise, it will become like, you know, Nityananda Prabhu's yatra. So, to Vrindavan, he goes with his party, doing kirtan and ecstatic, and then, oh, after 5-6 hours, oh, which direction is Vrindavan? And he said, oh, the same direction which you came from. You know, go back in the same direction. Like that. It shouldn't happen like that. Of course, you know, they were all having a nice time chanting and dancing. But the goal is also there, to reach Vrindavan. To complete the course is also there. So, now we'll start. As I mentioned, Shukadeva Goswami is going to speak about Ashtanga Yoga. Can someone recollect the 8 limbs of Ashtanga Yoga in order? Can, who wants to do? Harshad Prabhu.
Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi.
Correct. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. So these are the 8 limbs. So Shukadeva Goswami will describe these 8 limbs performed by the Ashtanga Yogi and subsequently describe how he attains liberation. Okay. So let's read.
Antakaletu Purusha Agate Gata Sadvasaha Chindyadasanga Shastrena Spruhan Dehenu Yechatam.
Antakale tu agate. When the time of death approaches, Purushaha, a person, gata sadvasaha, devoid of fear of death, chindyad asanga shastrena, with the weapon of detachment, he should be able to cut spruham, desires. What spruham? Dehe, desire to retain this body. Anuyechatam, and everything related to the body, like relatives, house, etc. So, who is qualified to practice this path? Shukadeva Goswami says, that person who has reasonable detachment from things of this world. So, he must not be attached to death. When the time of death comes, then he should be willing to give it up, give up his body. He says that what is the kind of detachment that is needed for a person who wants to apply himself to the path of liberation. That's what he's indicating here. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the knowledge of the soul, which is the most
which the most advanced materialistic scientists are not able to understand is the first preliminary instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, an intelligent person should be ready for his next life, as death is only like a change of dress. Which verse of Bhagavad Gita tells this? Vasamsi Jirnani Yatavihai. Death is nothing but sleeping for a few months in order to develop another material engagement. Means another gross body. Preparation for the next life starts at Brahmacharya, where one is trained in detachment, and therefore when the right time comes, Vanaprastha is very natural for such a person. But if one proper training is not there in detachment, so Prabhupada is commenting on this word, Chindyad Asanga Shastrena Spriham Dehenu Yechatam. But in order to develop detachment from matter, one should have a higher attachment. Therefore, if the higher attachment for the kingdom of God is there, then other attachments will automatically slacken. That's what Prabhupada writes. So, if the higher attachment is not there, then it is difficult to give up lower attachment. So, in essence, basically this person who is aspiring for liberation, it is but natural. How can someone aspire for liberation but be too attached to living in this material world? And there is no meaning for his attachment to liberation. That's what he is indicating. Grihat pravrajito dira punyakirta jalaplataha shuchau vivikta asino vidivat kalpitasani abhyasen manasa shuddha tuvid brahmaksharam param mano yachajyata shvaso brahma bijam avismaran. Dhiraha, the person controlling his senses. Grihat pravrajito, he should leave home. This is niyama. Niyama means do's, yama means don'ts. So grihat pravrajito, he has to leave home. It's a niyama. Punya tirtha jalaplutaha, he should take bath in holy places. This is also niyama. So yama niyama are generally, in one sense, if you see, they are in one category only. You can say that he should leave the house, niyama. He should not stay at home. Then it becomes yama, right? He should take bath in holy places, niyama. So he should not take bath anywhere else or something like that. You know, when it comes in the form of a don't, it's a yama, and when it comes in the form of a do, it's niyama. Vidivat kalpitasane, and he should then sitting on a seat made according to rules in a solitary clean place, shuchau vivikta. So this is talking about asana. Yama, niyama, asana. As Bhagavad Gita also says, shuchau deshe pratishtapya sthiram asanam atmana nati uchritam nati nicham chailajina kushottaram tatraikagram manakritva, and so on. It describes the various asanas, not various asanas, the proper sitting posture that is needed for proper meditation. So this has spoken about yama, niyama, asana. Asana means what? Clean place, solitary place, and the asana must be according to the rules. Then what he should do? Abhyaset shuddha trivid brahmaksharam param. He should repeat the pure syllable om. What is this? Which limb is this? This is pranayama. So the om is chanted in such a way that is only one can chant continuously by regulating the breath. Chanting the om is actually the first of the pranayam. Using the mind, one should
repeat using the mind. Jita Shwasa, on controlling the breath, make the mind motionless. Mano Yachet. Brahma Bijam Avismaran, while remembering the Om. So, here it is mentioned that the mind is made motionless by regulating the breathing. So, this is a very, because prana has an influence on the mind. And apana has an influence on prana. It's all connected. So, apana means that which regulates the bowel movement. Apana is that vayu that regulates the bowel movement. So, if the bowel movement is not regulated, then it affects the apana. Or it's an indication that the apana is not functioning properly. When someone feels constipated for a long time, like that. So then, when apana is disturbed, it affects the prana. So, those whose digestive system is not functioning properly, they will feel very weak. Because the prana becomes very weak. So, when prana becomes weak, then it becomes very difficult to concentrate also. Because when the prana is regulated, then mind is controlled. So therefore, if one is having digestive issues, then there is a good chance that the mind can become little restless. But having said that, you may even see very advanced devotees having digestive issues. But they overcome, they do not let it affect the mind because they have the higher absorption of Krishna consciousness. You know, they are much more absorbed in their services. But if that requisite absorption is not there, then potentially this can affect our mind. So, that's what is indicated here. You know, for an Ashtanga yogi, he says that he regulates the breathing, and by regulating the breathing, the mind is also controlled. Like that. Yeah.
Prana influences the mind. That's why it takes care of the digestion and the evacuation. That system is controlled by the apana vayu. And there is a connection between prana and apana.
So, here, Prabhupada commenting on the 17th verse, he says, the breathing process of pranayama is a material process of bringing the materially absorbed mind under control. It's a material process. Mind is not to be killed, but its quality of engagement should be changed. That is the key of bhakti yoga. By giving the higher absorption, more and more material impressions are replaced by the spiritual impressions. And automatically the mind gets absorbed there. Once mind is the pivot of the senses, if the quality of thinking, feeling and willing changes, then naturally the actions by the instrumental senses also change. So, the actions of the senses are guided by the impressions that is there in the mind. Someone who has never seen Rasgulla, he never gets attracted while seeing a Rasgulla. Because he doesn't look so attractive to him. It may look like a big sized naphthalene ball to him. If he has never ever heard about it. Or seen it or tasted it. But once he eats one Rasgulla and he really likes it, then the next time he sees that Rasgulla, he starts salivating automatically. Isn't it? So, how is it that yesterday he saw the same Rasgulla, nothing happened, and today even without even before putting it in his mouth, he has started salivating. Because there is this additional impression of enjoying the rasgulla within his mind. So then the mind has now triggered the sense of taste. Now it will trigger all other senses. It will trigger the legs to walk towards the rasgulla. It will trigger the hands to pick up the rasgulla. So Prabhupada says that one's mind is the pivot of senses. If the quality of thinking, feeling and willing changes, naturally the actions by the instrumental senses also change. So now, after one comes into Krishna consciousness and one is trained, even if one may see the rasgulla, if it is bhoga for offering for the Supreme Lord, then he thinks, oh, this has to be offered to the Supreme Lord. I cannot meditate on eating it. Even though, but at least, which means the Shraddha will pull in one direction. Even though sometimes we may look at that rasgulla and involuntarily you may start salivating also. Isn't it? When you are making the plate for Rajbhog or doing the backup, even though the especially if you have not had morning prasad and you are hungry. So then these are like involuntary actions, you know, naturally your senses may start. But these involuntary actions can also be changed if the mind is trained. If the default program of the mind is changed, then automatically, you know, the senses will start responding accordingly. That's the point. So Prabhupada says, commenting on Omkar, Omkar is that transcendental sound which can bring about this change of mind. Bhagavad Gita says, Pranavah Sarva Vedeshu. But then Prabhupada says, but who should chant this Omkar? Is it that from tomorrow all devotees should start chanting Omkar instead of Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Prabhupada says, only one who cannot directly chant the holy names of the Lord, that is neophytes, they should chant the Omkar. The transcendental nature of Krishna's holy name, form, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by blunt senses. Atas Sri Krishna Namadi Navaved Grahyam Indriyehi Sevon Mukehi Jukhvadav Swayameva Spuratyadaha. Therefore, people who cannot fix their mind on the personal form of the Lord are disciplined in impersonality through the yoga process to progress further. So those who cannot directly invest their mind in the personal form, they are disciplined by the yoga process to progress further, like that. Then, let's move further. Niyachet vishayodyokshan manasa buddhi sarati manakarnabirakshittam shubharte darayedhya. Niyachet. So how many limbs we have seen till now? Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. Four. So after Pranayama is Pratyahara. What is Pratyahara? Huh? Using the controlled mind, controlling the senses from approaching sense objects. That is Pratyahara. Niyachet. One should restrain. Akshan. Akshan means eyes. That here the eyes are taken as the representative of all our sense objects. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, etc. One should restrain the senses such as eye, vishayebhyo, from the sense objects. How? Manasa. By the mind. Buddhi sarati, whose assistant is the intelligence. So, the mind has already been controlled by pranayama. And mind can additionally be controlled by shastras also. That is through intelligence. So through pranayama and through intelligence, the mind has been controlled. With that controlled mind, the senses can be controlled. Because Indriyani paranyahur, indriyadya param manaha, manasastu parabuddhir, yo buddhe paratastu saha. So the mind is, the intelligence is superior to mind. And mind is superior to the senses. The senses can be controlled by the mind. So that is pratyahara. When the mind has been controlled fairly, then using that fairly controlled mind, one can control the senses. Dharayet diya. After pratyahara is what stage? Dharana. So that is what is mentioned. Dharayet diya. Dharayet indicates dharana. And concentrate with intelligence on the Shubha Arte. Shubha Arte means on that auspicious object. It is translated as the Supreme Lord, but it is not explicitly stated here. Right? So, like I may say, Prabhu, let's go to yoga studio. So, the inner circle of people know that, oh, aaj ka class yoga studio mein hai. But one who does not know, he may think yoga studio matlab, oh, yoga karne ke liye jane wale hai shayad. So, he may think like that. So, Shukadeva Goswami is indicating Shubha Arte. It means the Lord only, but it is not explicitly stated. Therefore, few verses down the line, Parikshit Maharaj will ask, who is that Shubha Arte? What should he meditate on? So, he will ask. So, even though it is translated as on the Lord, but it literally means on that auspicious object. That's the literal translation of this. Shubha Arte. Or on that auspicious goal. But he says, but this is not going to be easy. Mana karma bir akshiptam. The mind is always agitated by previous karmas. Previous karmas means previous impressions. Okay. So, the material impressions will hamper meditation on the object. This is a very important point. Like we discussed the other day, I think somewhere, I don't know, some discussion, first canto, I think we discussed on the 12th canto, sorry, 12th chapter Krishna's description of, you know, Mayyeva Munaratsva, Mayi Buddhim Niveshaya, Niveshishyasi Mayya. We discussed that, right? So that series. So in that, Karma Rupa Bhakti, he doesn't, there is no terminology like that, but we just, for our understanding. First is Smaranatmika. Smaranatmika means when the mind is naturally absorbed in the holy name, form, pastimes, etc. But sometimes, if there is some little disturbance, one may take shelter of the scriptures. You know, meditating on the beautiful prayers and things like that. And then, fix it back again on the holy name like that. That is Mananatmika Bhakti, second level. If that is not possible, then Krishna says Abhyasa Rupa Bhakti. Abhyasa Rupa Bhakti means practice. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astiram tatas tato niyam metat. Whenever the mind goes, do whatever is necessary. Read the Shastras, come in the right association and try to fix the mind again. So that is the third, Abhyasa Rupa Bhakti. Endeavoring to fix the mind. But all of that would be futile if there are too many material impressions which are affecting that person. So fixing the mind would be very difficult. Because the nature of mind is that mind will always look for surface impressions. So if you have engaged in whatever is the recent sense engagement, those impressions are very fresh in the mind. And mind has the natural nature to go and, access those impressions. And accordingly, it will instigate each sense to go in a particular direction. So, Krishna says that if you cannot जितना भी प्रयास प्रयास करके भी आपका मन लग नहीं रहा है, देन ही सेज देन यू हैव टू बिकम हम्बल, कम वन स्टेप डाउन एंड ही सेज चेक इफ यू आर कॉन्स्टेंटली एंगेजिंग योर सेंसेस इन कृष्णा कॉन्शियस एक्टिविटीज. मन लगे या ना लगे, वेदर योर माइंड इज अब्सॉर्ब्ड और नॉट डजंट मैटर, बट एटलीस्ट आर योर सेंसेस कंटिन्यूअसली, आर यू गिविंग देम नॉन स्टॉप कंटिन्यूअस एंगेजमेंट इन कृष्णा, इन कृष्णा सर्विस. सो इफ दैट इज देयर देन व्हाट, हाउ डज इट हेल्प, बिकॉज ऑल द फ्रेश इंप्रेशंस, सरफेस इंप्रेशंस would be some Krishna conscious impressions. So the mind, it becomes easier for the mind to access, dwell upon it. So it is only an illusion to think that 2-3 hours I will engage in sense gratification, rest of the day I must be able to fix my mind in Krishna's service. It's not at all possible. Because the surface impressions will be all these material impressions. Especially in today's day and age with smartphones and internet and all that, even 5 minutes is sufficient to rest of the day, you know, distract you. So in today's day and age, even to practice this karma rupa bhakti, constant engagement of senses in Krishna's activities is also becoming very, very difficult because of mass scale distraction. Everything at your fingertips, all you need to do is flick your finger and everything is available. So therefore, at least we must try to engage our senses constantly. Nothing doing. Like once someone asked either Radha Govind Maharaj or Gaur Krishna Maharaj, one of the two, said, Maharaj, japa mein mani nahi lag raha hai. To karne ka mani nahi kar raha hai. To Maharaj said, to nahi karega to man lag jayega. Abhi man nahi lag raha hai bolke japa hi chhod diya. तो नहीं करेगा तो मन लग जाएगा क्या. सो ही सेड यू कंटिन्यू चैंटिंग एंड देन मन लग जाएगा. दैट इज द मींस ऑफ डूइंग इट. सो बिफोर द माइंड कैन एंगेज द सेंसेस हैव टू एंगेज, बिकॉज द प्रिलिमिनरी इंप्रेशंस यू हैव टू गिव द माइंड. विदाउट एनी प्रिलिमिनरी इंप्रेशन ऑफ डूइंग दैट एक्टिविटी, हाउ विल द, what will the mind hold on to? So for the mind to hold on to it, it needs those preliminary impressions. So unless the initial stage, unless you force your senses to just like generator ko purana zamane ka generator ko start karne, abhi to switches aa gaye. Now also if you go for the lower end generators like 5 kva 2.5 kva generators, you see even now there is this, you turn it to get it started. Not that till you need power, you know, you have to keep on rotating it like that. It's not like that. Just to get it started. So it's not automatic. So initially the senses may have to be engaged continuously, even though the mind may not like. But once the initial impressions are generated and the surface impressions are all only devotional impressions, then the mind can at least hold on to something and concentrate there. So here he is warning Shukadeva Goswami that manaha karma virakshittam, mind is filled with lot of prior impressions of sense gratification which will pose obstacles. So don't think that it's going to be easy. It will not be easy to reach the stage of dharana. So while you are meditating on the Lord, lot of other impressions will come and distract you. So therefore, one needs to be sufficiently purified till one reaches the stage of dharana. That's what he is indicating here. Okay, let's move ahead. Tatraikavayavam dhyayet avyachinnena chetasa mano nirvishayam yatva tatakkinchana nasmaret snor mano yatra prasidati.
We say that tatra dhyayet eka avayavam. So when dharana is accomplished, dharana means meditation on the general form of the Lord is dharana. So there are many definitions of dharana. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi. One of the definitions is a general meditation on the form of the Lord is dharana. But when that meditation becomes more specific, when you become more attentive to the individual limbs of the Lord, then that is called dhyana. Eka avayavam dhyaye. You start meditating on the individual avayava, limbs. Avyachinnena chetasa, with uninterrupted mind. Nirvishayam manovitva tata kinchana nasmaret. So then dharana becomes dhyana. And then eventually when that meditation on the individual limbs becomes so focused that you are not at all distracted by anything else, then one should understand that one has reached the stage of samadhi. Padam tat paramam vishnor mano yatra prasidati. That is the Brahman aspect of the Lord in which the mind is extinguished. Which means the material mind is extinguished there. At that stage, he is not at all distracted because there are no material impressions at all. The mind is clean without any material impressions. So that is dharana, dhyana and samadhi. So Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, meditation on the form of Vishnu or Krishna is the last word on the subject of meditation. Here it is mentioned that one should practice meditating on the limbs of the body of the Lord. And this shows that the Lord is not impersonal. The Vishnu deities in the temple are also not idols, but they are identical with the Lord. Pratima nahi tumi sakshat Rajendranandan. Therefore, for a common man, it is more beneficial to meditate on the form of the Lord in the temple than to sit and meditate on Om. So we need not go out and preach to people that you should chant Om like that. Because it's more difficult. So if he is willing to listen to you, you might as well give Hare Krishna Maha Mantra than to give Om. Isn't it? Ultimately you can give something that which you already have. So if you don't have Shraddha in chanting Om, you cannot create Shraddha in anyone to chant Om. It's not at all possible. So ultimately, when it says that don't preach to a faithless person, it means that you create faith in him first. Act in such a way that he will accept the bhakti. Then you give him bhakti. Like that. Not that we need to go out and start preaching. Aapko shuddha bhakti karne ka nahi hai na, to om chant karo. Aisa humko bolne ka zarurat nahi. That's not necessary. Though both Om and the deity are representations of the Lord, but still it is, Prabhupada says, it's easier to meditate on the deity than on Om. But impersonal Om meditation is difficult, as Krishna also says, Klesho adhikatarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam. And meditation in the Vishnu form is the ultimate goal of meditation, like that.
Rajastamodhyam akshiptam bimodam manatmanah yachedharanaya dhiro hantiya tatkritam malam.
The wise man then controls the mind agitated by rajas and bewildered by tamas by the practice of dharana. which destroys the impurity produced by rajas and tamas. One may say that if there are too many impressions of rajas and tamas which is distracting, then one must steady one's dharana very nicely and not prematurely move to the stage of dhyana. So if one is not able to get a steady meditation on the general form of the Lord, which is the stage of dharana, and if he is disturbed every once in a while because of his past impressions, then he should not prematurely go to the level of dhyana, but he should study his practice of dharana first. That's what is indicated in this verse. So Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, persons who are conducted by too much passion and ignorance cannot be candidates for being situated in the transcendental stage of God realization. Such persons, by constant remembrance of Vishnu in his impersonal form, can rectify their leanings. Impersonal form means what? What is impersonal form? Universal form. It's going to come later, and Prabhupada is giving a hint here only. It's like telling its impersonal form. In the sense, like Prakriti is called Avyakta. Avyakta means what? Unmanifest. Unmanifest does not mean it's invisible. Like for example, milk is there. From milk only you can make dahi. From milk only you can make sandesh, you can make peda, you can make rasgulla, you can make rasmalai. So milk contains all of that. Here is a bucket of milk. Can you show me rasgulla, peda, rasmalai? No, but it is all there in an unmanifest form. So therefore, Pradhan is called Avyakta Prakriti. Because even though it has all the varieties of this material world, all that variety is unmanifest. Just like milk is the unmanifest form of Peda, Rasgulla, Rasmalai, etc. So Avyakta. So Avyakta does not mean invisible. So what is avyakta? Variety is avyakta, but not that the substance itself is not avyakta. Milk is there, but what is unmanifest is not milk. What is unmanifest is peda, rasgulla, rasmalai, all these things, even though they are potentially there. So that's why the impersonal form means it's not like the... We will try to understand it little more when we go further. Generally, the impersonal is unknown is fall in this category. After hundreds of such births, such impersonal is unknown is they surrender to the Lord in his personal feature. Dhunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. First statement of the purport. Persons who are conducted by too much passion and ignorance cannot be candidates for being situated in the transcendental stage of God realization. Such persons, by constant remembrance of Vishnu in his impersonal form, can rectify their leanings. Yeah. So, universal form is an imaginary form. But not all imagination is useless. Like for example, you have a map. Where is Delhi? Here is Delhi. Is Delhi here? Delhi is not here. You can imagine Delhi here. So map is an imagination of various things, but it's not a useless imagination. There are many kinds of useless imagination. Like for example, why is Advaita Prabhu looking at me like that? Maybe he must be thinking that why I am prolonging the class so much and discussing all such things. You know, these are like useless imagination. So there are a lot of things which when imagined are useless. But there is a lot of useful imagination also. So Virat Rupa is one such bona fide imagination, but which has some potential for some people, not everyone. So Virat Rupa's imagination means, what is imagination in Virat Rupa? What is it that is imagination? Like in a map, this is Delhi. So this is not Delhi, but that does not mean that Delhi itself is an imagination. Like in the Virat form, there is Patal Loka, Atala Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Rasatala, Patala, and all the 14 other 14 planetary systems are there. They are not imagination. They are real. But to think that the Patala is his feet, the Satyaloka is his head, to think that actually there is a personality who exists with the planetary systems as his hands, feet, leg, that is an imagination. But what constitutes that form, the ingredients of that Virat Rupa, is not imagination. To think that all these ingredients come together to form a personality, that is an imagination. There is no personality called Virat Purusha. It's an imaginary conception. But the constituents of the Virat Purusha is not imaginary. Patal Loka is actually there. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, all of them are actually there. They are not imagination. Just like sometimes we may get some carrots and beans and mutter and some cabbage, you know, different colorful vegetables, and put them together, shred them nicely and make a nice beautiful picture of Krishna. So you may say that this is an, you can imagine Krishna here. This is Krishna. That is not actually Krishna. But of course, when a devotee makes it, it's actually Krishna only. It's a wrong example. You can say that you make the map of India. You say this is India. This is not India. You can imagine it to be India. But that does not mean whatever I have put, the carrots and cabbage, that is also imagination. That is real. So, the same way, the planetary systems and the brahmanas and the various things that are described as being parts of Virat Rupa, they are real, but to think that all of them come together to form a Purusha, that is an imagination. Like that. Correct. Correct. See, this is not these are not like, in one sense, an intellectual thing. Just because a person is attracted to a personal form while in this material world, here we are talking about perception of absolute truth. That is different from common dealings, you know, getting attracted to a woman or wealth. Like that. So, these are talking about specific qualifications, spiritual qualifications. You are not talking about what you get attracted while you are, what your senses get attracted to. It's not in that sense. And it's not a hole in all qualification also, because even devotees may sometimes get attracted to wealth and women like that. That does not mean they should also start meditating on the Virat Purusha. So he is not talking in that sense. He is giving a very simplistic understanding. But this is not the actual qualification. Whoever is attached to woman and wealth should meditate on the Virat form. Then probably most of us should be meditating on the Virat form. So it's not like that. So we will see, this will be described in much more detail. So basically, but while he is impure, such a neophyte is given a chance to realize the relation of God in everything by the philosophy of pantheism. What is pantheism? That is polytheism. Worship of nature, or worship of the absolute as nature, which is actually Virat Rup. So what Virat Rup worship is, what is being described by Prabhupada here as pantheism. Pantheism extends the conception of absolute truth into the field of material energy. When such a pantheist comes in touch with a devotee who knows the art of converting material to spiritual by service attitude, then the theory of pantheism can be perfected. I will read again. You have to explain this statement. When such a pantheist comes in touch with a devotee who knows the art of converting material to spiritual by service attitude, then the theory of pantheism can be perfected. What does it mean? So basically, the pantheist sees, I want to enjoy this, but it is a part of this Purusha. I want to enjoy in this planet, but it is a limb of this Purusha. Then he thinks, it seems like I can't enjoy anything independently without taking permission from this person. So then the devotee comes in, he says, oh, perfect understanding. Everything belongs to the Lord. You utilize everything in the service of the Lord. And then he will allow you to use it for a sense gratification, whatever it may be. So basically, when the pantheist comes in touch with a devotee, he will utilize that thought process of the pantheist to engage him in devotional service. So ultimately, when Bhagavatam describes all these other pantheistic ideas, it is ultimately to bring them to the path of pure devotion. And that is the culmination of all this pantheism, like that. Yeah, Jeevi is one way. You know, there are, you can engage them. You are interested in this? Okay, come, do it and then engage it in Krishna's service, like that. So, either you can look at this or you can look at Subodhini. You know, there is this flow chart, I'll describe this flow chart, because this flow chart is the basis of the next two chapters. Remember, the second half of the first chapter and the second chapter. You know, this is like the flow. This is like the, you can say, the essence of what we are going to discuss. So to understand this flow chart is very important. So what he is going to describe now is this Ashtanga Yoga process. Ashtanga Yoga process, as we know, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara. When one comes to that stage, then he is ready for Dharana, meditating on the form. So at that point of time, the devotee or the yogi sees, is my heart fairly free of material desires? Desires for enjoying this material world. So if he realizes that no, my heart is not yet pure, then he cannot meditate on the Paramatma form of the Lord. So he has to meditate on the, if there is desire, then the Dharanashraya is Virat Roop. Dharanashraya means the object of meditation. So he should meditate on the Virat Roop. And after meditating on the Virat Roop, his heart may become fairly purified. And then he sees, oh, is my heart purified yet? He says, no. Still I have sense gratificatory desires to enjoy. Then he says, okay, fine. So then you continue meditating on this Virat Roop, and then he progresses further, and while giving up his body, he travels with his subtle body, and he gets an opportunity. So such a person, a Virat Roop meditator, what is his goal? Liberation only is his goal. But he does not want to completely dedicate himself to the path of liberation. He says, liberation I want, but along with it, I have these other desires also which I want to fulfill. So he goes through a path of liberation which is called Krama Mukti. Krama means gradual, step by step. So he gradually goes to various planetary systems where he gets to experience pleasure that he desires. So then gradually, when he leaves that planet, he leaves that level of desire also. So he becomes free of that level of desire. So which means he is liberated from that level of desire. The next planet. So these planets are gradually more and more subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler, and finally he reaches Brahman. So at every stage, a subtler and subtler covering gets, he becomes liberated from the crossest desire to a more subtler, more subtler, more subtler, more subtler, till the subtlest desire is all extinguished. And finally, he attains liberation. This is a very slow process. Bad association can affect any place. But generally, it's not mentioned like that. Yeah, if he chooses to. Because we will see in detail who this person is. He's not just a very... He is not a materialistic sense gratifier. He is a very exalted personality. But unfortunately, he didn't come in touch with a pure devotee and get the pure devotional seed. But otherwise, the desires that he has in his heart may be much benign desires than what a practicing devotee might have in his heart. Benign means not so gross. But just that the only problem is that he didn't come in touch with a pure devotee and receive the pure devotional seed. Therefore, he has to struggle meditating for many lifetimes on this Virat Purusha. At any stage, this will be terminated if he comes in touch with a pure devotee. But this person who is after completing this Yama Niyama Asana Pranayama Pratyahara, if his heart has fairly become pure, then he is qualified to meditate on Paramatma form of the Lord. Then his Dharanashraya. Dharanashraya means the object of meditation becomes Paramatma. So when he performs meditation on Paramatma, then he achieves Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. And after Samadhi, he performs a process called Shat Chakra Yoga. We will see this. And after performing Shat Chakra Yoga, he gives up his gross and subtle body and immediately attains liberation. So this is called direct liberation for a Paramatma meditating yogi through the process of Shat Chakra Yoga. So this is one path. And the other path is for a person whose heart still has materialistic desires, so therefore he is not yet qualified to meditate in the Paramatma. So he achieves liberation through the process of Krama Mukti. So these two paths are what we are going to see now. The rest of the first chapter and the second chapter. So if you have understood this template, then the subsequent verses are, you will be able to relate to it very easily. Yes, Mukta Kesh Prabhu.
Yesterday you were telling that though these jnanis or ashtang yogis, to get perfection they have to give up this jnana aspect or jnana aspect.
Correct.
So what I mean, that like material aspect, because the transcendental, the result is transcendental provision. So up to pranayama and pratyahara, that is the material, and later on dharana, afterwards it becomes transcendental because he is focusing on Lord. Is that right? Or what is given?
Not
up?
Really. Basically, the what he gives up means, see, in Kapila Dev's teachings, the third canto, you will see, we may think that Ashtanga Yoga means 24 hours he is sitting and doing some Ashtanga Yoga only. It's not like that. So, he practices, there are a lot of his limbs which are Ashtanga, but some of his limbs are devotional limbs. For example, for the Ashtanga Yoga it is described, Vaikuntha Leela Abhidhyanam is one of the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. Vaikuntha Leela Abhidhyanam means he is meditating on the pastimes of the Lord. This is a bhakti limb. So, and there are some Ashtanga limbs, there are some Jnana limbs also he does, because he needs some mind control also. So, therefore, so he gives these limbs up. But the bhakti limbs he does not give up. So, we have a very naive, simplistic understanding of what Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga is. But it's, we don't have to know more details because we are not going to practice it. But at the same thing, to think that it is only that much is also a very naive understanding. It has many other limbs. The other limbs are given up and the bhakti limbs are retained. Like that. Okay. So then he continues, Yasyam sandarya manayam yogino bhakti lakshanah ashu sampadyate yoga ashrayam badramikshatah. In that process of dharana, the yogi who sees the Lord, badram ashrayam ikshatah. Again you see here, translated as the Lord, but here also he says, badram ashrayam means the auspicious shelter. Previously it said what? Shubharte. So both this Badramashram and Shubharte refers to the object of meditation. But what that Shubharte or Badramashram is, till now Sukadeva Goswami has not revealed. This flow chart we have seen. But till now flow chart has not been described by Sukadeva Goswami. So Parikshit Maharaj till now does not know what that object of meditation is, to achieve that liberation. So in that process of dharana, the yogi who sees the Lord by dharana quickly completes yoga bhakti lakshana, which means that yoga which has bhakti as a lakshana, which means bhakti mishra yoga. So at this point of time, Parikshit Maharaj has three questions to ask. Raja uvacha yata sandaryate brahman dharana yatra sammata yadrashiva hare dasho purushasya manomalam. He says, O brahmana, yata sandaryate, how is this dharana accomplished? Apne aap dharana shreya manifest ho jata hai ki क्या है मुझे समझ में नहीं आ रहा है, हाउ इज दिस धारणा अकम्प्लिश्ड? धारणा यत्र सम्मता, व्हाट इज एन अप्रूव्ड ऑब्जेक्ट ऑफ कॉन्सेंट्रेशन, उसके बारे में तो आप बताया नहीं, होम शुड आई मेडिटेट ऑन? यादृशी वा हरे दासो पुरुषस्य मनोमलम, हाउ कैन वन क्विकली रिमूव द कंटामिनेशन इन द माइंड? You said that the impressions will come and disturb. What is the quickest way to remove these impressions? Huh? So these three questions are asked by Parikshit Maharaj. Shubhartha is what? Or Bhadram Ashram? What is that? Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, commenting on the word manomalam, he says, the dirty things in the heart of a conditioned soul which have been accumulated over lifetimes of material life is the root cause of all troubles. The sinful impressions is the root cause of all troubles. Because of this dirt, instead of serving the Lord, the conditioned soul is serving his concocted desires. Therefore, how one can remove this dirt? So, Srila Prabhupada says, only by coming in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But not everyone can put faith on the personal form of the Lord. So, now Prabhupada is talking about qualification. Not everyone can put faith in the personal form of the Lord. For that, the Virat Roop is there. Again, till now, Shukadeva Goswami has not spoken about Virat Roop. Prabhupada is only speaking. He is giving the prelude. Viratru Bharai, Viratru Bharai. Be ready. Like that. So in two purports consecutively, he is speaking about Viratru. How does the Viratru help and all that? But till now, Viratru ke bare mein Shukadeva Goswami kuch bole nahi abhi tak. This is an impersonal feature of his potencies. But since the potent and the potencies are identical, this Viratru allows the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord indirectly. Indirect association. This can then directly lead to personal contact. At least some aspect of absolute, at least there is something absolute to accept. He may be person or in person. If you want to progress further from impersonal, at least accept an impersonal form. That is the Virat Roop. Like that. But Prabhupada says that Parikshit Maharaj is already a pure devotee. Why is he asking all these questions? So he says, only for the benefit of others. For benefiting others, he is asking. So in response, now Shukadeva Goswami is going to answer these three questions. Shri Shukha Uvacha, जितासनो जितश्वासो जितसंगो जितेन्द्रियः स्थूले भगवतो रूपे मनसंदारेद्या. He says, जितासनो जितश्वासो जितसंगो जितेन्द्रियः. He says, oh, if you are not able to attain the dharana easily, if you are getting distracted, then go back to the basics. Do a check, you know, checklist. Take your checklist and check again. Jitasano, did you sit in the right posture? Of course, Ashtanga Yoga is being discussed. Is your posture right? First thing you check that. Late ke to meditate ta nahi kar raha hai na. So, Jitasano, Jitashwaso, have you perfected your pranayama properly? Check that out. Jita Sango, are you doing this pranayama while not giving up your bad association? Then that's a problem. Jitendriyaha, by perfecting pranayama, are your senses controlled? Yet, if all of these things are checked, then you must be able to attain dharana. But if there is a problem anywhere, then dharana will be difficult. Dharana will not be possible. So he says, Jitasano, Jitashwaso, Jitasango, Jitendriya, Manas Sandarayed. But even after that, if your material impressions are troubling you so much, then stule bhagavato rupe manas sandareddhya. Then you should meditate on the gross form of the Lord. What is the gross form of the Lord? Virat Rupa. So, even after doing these checks, if still the material impressions are troubling you, then it means that you should at least, considering that you have qualification for Ashtanga Yoga, so you may have that qualification, but you do not yet have the qualification for meditating on the Paramatma form of the Lord. So, meditate on the Virat Purusha. That is recommended. That is Dharanashraya. Object of meditation is Virat Rupa, not Paramatma. So that's what he says here. So, so the qualification for Ashtanga Yoga, I mean, definitely means he must have a kind of some prayojan of liberation, and to achieve that prayojan of liberation, he must think that he must practice Ashtanga Yoga. This is not the complete qualification. Apart from that, you know, there are other qualifications there. Bhakti is the only process in which the only qualification is faith. All the other practices, they need some prerequisites in the form of some material qualification. Whereas Ashtanga Yoga also has some material qualifications. You cannot be a householder and things like that. But Bhakti Yoga is the only process where the only qualification is faith. Faith in Bhakti is the only qualification. Okay. Then, he says, what is this Virat Purusha? So, this is what we will discuss. The last section is a very quick section. We will be able to complete this last section of first chapter in less than half an hour tomorrow. So, we will complete it tomorrow. We'll start with this last section, description of the universal form. The purpose of this description, I will just end with this one point, that as we saw that there are many descriptions of the universal form in the second canto, three descriptions in the second canto and two more descriptions in the third canto. But even though there are many descriptions which may seem similar, but the purpose of the description is different. Only superficially do they seem similar, but their purpose is different. For example, the first chapter is the first description of Virat Rupa. The purpose of the description is to show what is the dharanashraya, what is the object of meditation for this Virat Rupa meditator. Even though we say that it is an imaginary form, but you can't imagine anything. There is a bona fide imagination also that is recommended. So it's imaginary, that does not mean you can imagine anything. There is a bona fide imagination. So what is that bona fide imagination? To describe that, this first description of universal form comes. The second description of universal form will come in chapter 5 and 6. The purpose of that description is to show how the Supreme Lord is the material and effective cause of this material world. Material cause, effective cause. Like the classic example is when a potter is making a pot. When a potter is making a pot, the clay is the material cause, upadana karana. The potter is the effective cause or nimitta karan, and then there is the potter's wheel and stick that is there. They are called the instrumental cause or sahakari karan. Like that, causes are manifold. The traditional shastras describe 9 causes. But these nine causes can be brought down to these three: Upadan, Nimitta and Sahakari. But even the Sahakari can be merged with Upadan. Sorry, Sahakari can be merged with Nimitta. And in essence, you can say that the Vaishnavacharya has explained that there are two causes: the material cause and the effective cause. Okay. So the second description of the universal form, the description is for the purpose of explaining how in this material world, anything that you see in this material world, the Supreme Lord, the Transcendental Personality, He is the material and effective cause of this material world. In order, meaning He is both the clay and He is the potter also. And He is the potter's wheel and stick. Everything is the Supreme Lord only. In order to explain this concept, the second description of the universal form comes. Then the third description of universal form comes in the 10th chapter. Here, the 10th chapter description of the universal form is to explain the concept that anything that you see in this the material body, whether it is gross body or subtle body, is a product of a desire of the living entity. Therefore, these three descriptions have three different purposes. And only very superficially, from a very superficial point of view, do these three descriptions look the same. But they are not same. They carry different purposes and their description is different actually. So, with this I will end today's discussion. And tomorrow very quickly we will complete the rest of first chapter and we will make a good progress in the second chapter. So we'll end here and we'll touch upon this point of, you know, these three, the various descriptions of universal form having various purposes. We'll touch upon it little more tomorrow so that we can appreciate that not all descriptions of universal form are same. It's little different. Same universal form, but the purpose is different. The lesson that is coming from that description is a different lesson that the Acharya is trying to convey. So this we will describe little more tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.